Hello and welcome to the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And we're here to talk about the Tour de Suisse. It's the other tune-up race, the other Tour de France tune-up race, often mentioned in conversation with the Critérium du Dauphiné, and for good reason. They happen semi-concurrently. Dauphiné will not be finished by the time the Tour de Suisse starts. They're both popular tune-ups for the Tour de France. And a lot of times we'll see a lot of similar riders at both races, although...
Well, I think we actually see none of this.
I don't mean shared riders. I mean similar kinds of riders. Guys who will be contending at the Tour de France, of course. Although I think the Dauphiné is the pretty clear dominant Tour de France tune-up race at this point in time, which to me actually gives some pros to the Tour de Suisse, because I feel like the Dauphiné conversation is just so dominated by the Tour de France. Everything that happens is in the Dauphiné is just kind of viewed through this lens of Tour de France prep. Whereas I think the Tour de Suisse, you kind of see it as its own race. You have guys who actually target it. Just ask Rui Costa, who's won three times, or Simon Spielak, who always comes here to win this race. And I kind of like that about it, because we don't have to constantly talk about the Tour de France while we watch the Tour de Suisse.
We kind of do a little bit.
We'll still talk about it. Yeah,
it's really more the ecosystem than anything specific to the event. We certainly won't see, you know, the ASO plugging the Tour de France at the Tour de Suisse. It is a little weird from my point of view that this. Granted, Switzerland is, as far as I can tell, an awesome place to ride a bike, but we already had the Tour of Romandie, and I realize historically Switzerland is not a well-defined entity. So, like, you know, Romandie has a rich history sort of independent of the idea of Switzerland. But at the same time, I would love to see a tune-up race of this caliber somewhere else. Nothing against Switzerland, but it'd be cool if they had something like this in the mountainous parts of Germany or Austria, or just kind of get racing out to more people, to bring them more action by the roadside. I mean, I make fun of the Tour of California, but... You know, it's a big deal for Americans, and there are a lot of Germans out there who are coming around to liking cycling again. So I think it'd be cool to spread the magic around.
Yeah, I don't see why there couldn't be a Tour de Austria or Tour de... what's the word for Germany in French? Whatever that is. Allemagne. It would be really cool if there were one of those. But I will say the Tour de Suisse, much like the Tour de Romandie, gets to be pretty darn scenic because of its Swiss location, which is kind of cool. I think it's more scenic than the Dauphiné by a significant margin, which is nice.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
So speaking of the scenery, let's get a little deeper into the conversation about this route, which will involve plenty of mountain scenery. There are some serious mountain stages, just a lot of GC-type days, which is probably why there aren't a whole lot of sprinters in attendance in this race. So let's get into that conversation now. So the Tour de Suisse 2016 kicks off with a stage that to me looks like a prologue. It's a time trial. It's under 10 kilometers. It's the first stage of the race.
It's not particularly hilly.
No. For some reason, it's not officially classed as a prologue. I don't really know what the rules on that are. On the website, it says stage one, parentheses, prologue in bar. But bar being the city where it is. But not prologue. It's stage one. You know, so
the logical part of me kind of likes the fact that they just give every day a stage.
I like that
one.
Too.
I mean, if I were being totally pedantic, I'd say maybe prologue was preferable because you're starting counting at zero, which is what we should do, but we don't because we think in integers. But for the most part, this is going to make the most sense to people. Like when you say it's the, you know, fifth day of the Dauphiné and it's stage four, that is immediately confusing.
Yeah, trust me, as somebody who occasionally writes race reports. And by occasion, I mean twice a week.
For a job.
At least.
For money.
It does become difficult saying fifth day, fourth stage a lot. So maybe this is a good thing. Thanks, Tour de Suisse. So anyway, it's a pretty flat prologue-esque time trial. It's not very long in that it is 6.4 kilometers. And I think it's going to be a run-of-the-mill prologue kind of day. And probably not going to have a huge impact on the race, but... You never know if somebody could crash out or have some serious problems. Who knows?
I think there's something to be said for not huge impact on the first day, too. I mean, it just gives it a little order, puts one team in charge of chasing it. It's an acquired taste, kind of, to cycling. It's not immediately going to make sense to anybody, but it does make sense once you've started watching bike racing.
At least they're not starting with the team time trial, so I'm happy with the way they're kicking this off. Stage two, it's a bumpy day. It's an intermediate type day, which is just kind of it's kind of
it's par almost for the like course. There's a Swiss rider who kind of specializes.
Yes, in this sort to of me, thing. These kinds of days in Switzerland they just seem like Michael Albasini days. We're just going to call this a Michael Albasini kind of day. He is racing here. Michael Albasini, Swiss rider, who always tends to do extremely well when racing in Switzerland. And this just looks like a great day for him. There are three categorized climbs, and I would think that'd be too difficult for pure sprinters. This is just the kind of day that Albasini likes. Stage three, once again,
could be... Yeah, like I said, it's almost like there's a good Swiss
Albasini. Guy who's good at this. It's like they've designed this with Michael Albasini in mind, or with potentially Peter Sagan, who is also on the start list. We'll get to that in a little while. But
mountain biker Peter Sagan?
Rio mountain biking star. We do have a couple of like punchy... more versatile fast finishers here, so maybe that's what they have in mind.
Stage. I mean, I think this tends a little more to traditional sprinting. They're closer to the end, they're closer together, but they're also only cat threes. So
yeah, that's true. Stage four. This could be a little more for the traditional sprinters in that there's not a whole lot of climb, but there is a climb very close to the end of the stage. It's category two, at kilometer 182.5, which is less than 12 kilometers. Which is just around 10 kilometers from the finish in Champagne. So that could be one for the sprinters, could be one for a late attacker, but this has been four stages so far that probably aren't going to have a GC impact, which is probably good for the GC guys because the five stages that come next are really hard. And you don't usually see that. You don't usually see 5 days in a row of GC impact.
This might scare me off if I'm a Tour de France. Like, the fifth stage of the race is just, I mean, they're huge climbs.
Yeah. The fifth stage has two Orc category climbs and one Cat 1. It's not a very long stage. I wonder how that will kind of impact the racing. It's going to be fast racing. Does that favor the breakaway? I don't know. But it's an interesting day because despite being so short, it's very hard.
I mean, it's hard enough that you... I don't know. I'm always, as someone who is a bad amateur racer and an even worse amateur trainer, I am constantly in fear of training a little bit too hard and then showing up at a race not feeling good. And this is the sort of course that I look at and I'm like, man, this would totally screw me up if I were a professional cyclist.
Yeah, I, as somebody who's probably significantly worse than you in both of those departments, this definitely scares me. This finish looks tough, especially after the earlier climbs in the stage, and it doesn't get any easier in the next couple of days. Stage six, the Orc category climb in the middle of the stage is really long. I mean, it's over 20 kilometers in length. They got a Cat 1 finish, so I don't think if you are having a bad day, you're going to really be able to hold on this stage. It's just high altitude, and we've seen in the Giro what that can do to guys.
No, there's a lot of I don't know if there's any finishing climbs above 2,000 meters, but there are several passes earlier in the day on top of or category climbs. So,
yeah. The Clausen Pass in stage six looks like a tough one. Stage seven, again, it's a mountain finish. There's an or category climb early in the day, and there's an or category climb to close things out. And it's a long stage on top of all that. 224 kilometers ending with an or category climb. That's, oof. It's a tough day, and the riders are probably going to be hoping to have a less challenging day because stage eight is going to be a time trial that will probably be very important. So there's just nowhere to rest in those last 5 days of this race. In stage eight, you have 16.8 kilometers on rolling hills, but nothing too challenging to, I think, make a huge mark in this race. If you're a good time trialist, you can make a big difference here.
Yeah, I almost feel like 16.8 is a little short considering the climbs that came before this. Like, this, to me, it really seems tipped more toward this time trial really tips the whole GC race more towards climbers just because they're like, yeah, you can make up 90 seconds, but can you make up 3 minutes?
Yeah, I agree. That's probably true. It's definitely not a... not a super long, not a 50 kilometer.
Yeah, it's not a grand tour length time trial by any means.
So. And usually a 16.8K in a 1 week race is enough to make a difference. But I guess with all these climbs, if you're not climbing well, then you're not going to win this race, period. There's another climbing day to close out the race. The ninth and final stage has two or category climbs, the Albula Pass and the Fluela Pass, which is another tough one. I mean, they end on a downhill, into a flat finish.
I mean, it's a really short day. So, I mean, 17K downhill at the end of a 117K day.
It's going to be fast.
Yeah, it's.
I actually kind of like these stages because I definitely expect somebody to attack over that final climb and probably be able to hold out, which should make for a pretty interesting finale, although dangerous.
I mean, isn't it just kind of – it's. I think it's just up and down the valley. I don't think it's a hugely reckless descent. Davos is a cross-country ski venue of some – has a cross-country ski venue of some repute, and I remember it being pretty tucked into the mountains. I don't think this is a big swervy Gavia style descent.
No, it's not. You know, looking at the map, it's not all over the place, but on a 117 kilometer stage on a downhill gradient, I would imagine they're going pretty fast. So
gotcha.
That's in and of itself a kind of dangerous pursuit, even if you're not all over the road. But either way, I think it's going to be an important day, and I think it is going to be a chance. I mean, a lot of times we see the last stage of a race not really having an impact on the event. But the Tour de Suisse, time and time again, they make sure that the last day is crucial to the overall title. Often a time trial on the last day at the Tour de Suisse. This year they put the time trial before the last stage, but once again we're going to have a really critical final day of racing. So that's a route. It's 9 stages, which is pretty hefty for a one-week quote-unquote race.
9 stages, but again, with the exception of that one 211 K stage, on the shorter side.
Pretty short, yeah, so. That's true. And even the time trials are short, and particularly the non-prologue. That's the route. Let's talk start lists. The Tour de Suisse start list this year has some big names on it. I think plenty of familiar names on the GC contenders list, but fewer big stars, I would have to say. If we're talking about this in comparison to the race it's always compared to, the Dauphiné, there are fewer top Grand Tour type stars on the Tour de Suisse start list than there are in the Dauphiné. But there are some good riders here, and in particular, there are riders here who tend to do well in this race, and I think that's going to be the big showdown in the GC. It's going to be the biggest names on the start list in terms of GC type riders versus some very good riders who do tend to do particularly well in the Tour de Suisse. So I'll start this conversation off with a strong rider who does extremely well here, who is Rui Costa. He's a 3-time Tour de Suisse winner. There were 3 straight years where he won it. Obviously, he's a former world champion and extremely talented rider, but I think if you stacked him up with some of the other names on the start list in most other races, you might put him in maybe the second tier, but in a race like the Tour de Suisse, where he has been so impressive in the past, you have to put him right up there in the top of the conversation, just because something happens, something kicks in at the Tour de Suisse. This guy is always very strong. Although he didn't race at the Tour de Suisse last year, he instead opted to go to the Dauphiné, where he won a stage and came in 3rd. The route, I think, is going to be a little challenging for Costa this year. It's a little more climber-friendly than it was the years that he won. I like to think Costa's does a little better on stages that have a lot of up and down and up and down and opportunities to attack. He's won a couple of tour stages that way. I think the high mountains here could prove a bit challenging, but he's certainly going to be up there in the conversation.
Another rider who kind of comes towards the top of this, and not just because we're Americans, is TJ Van Garderen at BMC, who's had a pretty good season so far. Not amazing, but some pretty good GC finishes, some top 10s. What I think is the most interesting storyline here is he's probably kind of paying attention to what's going on in the Dauphiné while he's competing this event. Currently, Richie Porte is in 2nd, only 6 seconds down, I think, time gaps all from the first day of racing. But it's, you know, this is really his opportunity to make a case for team leadership, I think.
Sort of an audition.
He may be a little more focused on this event than a lot of the other guys who are kind of looking more at the Grand Tours that are here for training.
And I do think it suits him. These climbs are long, sort of not a whole lot of gradient changes, which is definitely TJ Van Garderen's thing. There is some time trialing here, so.
How do you think he'll like the shorter TTs? You see, I'm trying to come up with some some prologue chops, some shorter TT chops, and nothing is springing to mind hugely.
I don't think he loves prologues, but the 16.8K is long enough for him to do well, I think. I mean, he won that Ruta del Sol time trial, which is about 20K earlier this year, so I think that could be fine for him. Another rider who does quite well in the time trials, on the longer climbs, Geraint Thomas has become one of Sky's new big GC guys, and this is a race that I think he can do very well in. I think it suits him quite well. He does quite well in the shorter time trials. If I recall correctly, his first World Tour victory was a prologue. It was. He won a Tour de Romandie prologue back in 2012.
He's a former trackie, so...
Yeah, you would expect it, I guess.
Yeah, short individual efforts, probably up his alley.
But so are mountain climbs. He was second overall in the Tour de Suisse last year, after all. So you would think he can repeat in some way a strong performance here. And he is, I think, trying to prove to the world that he could be this GC guy. So this is going to be a race that he's going to be going hard.
And I think, like TJ, too, these are his kind of climbs. There's a lot less kind of tempo changing, a little more grinding, a little more finding that sustainable place and holding it. Speaking of being well-suited to this style of racing, Katusha's Simon Spielak, very good at this particular race, won it last year, also very strong at Tour of Romandie. We saw him up in the GC this year, but not as dominant, only seventh, which is, you know, it's a really weird place to put the word only. But he is a guy who, a lot like Rui Costa, kind of specializes in this sort of event and does very well. I personally would love to see a rider like Costa or Spielak win here, just to get the publicity, to show that this is a thing you can specialize in and defeat, you know, the biggest names in the sport. Yeah, it's not at the Tour. Yeah, they're maybe not focusing here, but it's a great way to kind of give yourself exposure and say there's more to it than one day's and 3 week races.
Yeah, we mentioned this last week, how we wish there were a couple more guys out there who maybe focus only on the one-week races to bring some more excitement to the one-week races. And insofar as there are a few guys in the peloton who do that now, they are at this race. We're talking Krosta, we're talking Spielak. Both of them are extremely strong in the one-week races in particular. Neither of them have really done anything in the Grand Tours apart from stage hunting, which they've done well. The third guy that pops to my mind is Yannis Aguirre, who has been really strong in one-week races in the last 2 or 3 years. It's been his opportunity to show off his ability, because Movistar tends to back Valverde or Quintana in the Grand Tours. Izaguirre has won the Tour de Pologne. He's always up there in Pays Vasco. This year he was third in Romandie, and I think he's going to be right up there in the Tour de Suisse as well. Just like Geraint Thomas and TJ Van Garderen, he likes the time trials. He likes those climbs that allow him to kind of churn out a strong rhythm. And I think this is the kind of race he'll do well in, especially because he does tend to do well when given his opportunities to do his own thing rather than supporting Quintana or Valverde.
You know who does not like time trials, at least results-wise, historically has not done well in them, is Warren Barguil.
Yeah, what if he loves them? Maybe he loves them.
Yeah, it's true. He could enjoy them and just not be good at them, which is kind of the story of my life. Not specific to time trials. Anyway, he's a guy who is still quite young. He's been kind of all, I don't want to say he's been all over the place in terms of results. He's been consistently good, but it's just, I think people are really, and he himself, they're really trying to figure out what he's good at. He had some very strong results in the Ardennes Classics this year. He's been a top GC guy at the Vuelta. He's done two Vuelta stages, but that was 3 years ago. So I can almost see him sort of doing well at an event like this and kind of turning in that Rui Costa direction, where you can throw down in a hilly classic, do very well, maybe take a couple, maybe sneak off with a world title, and also have that ability in these 1 day or these 1 week events. He's been 12th at the Tour de Suisse before. I'm curious to see how he develops as a rider. And because he is not a great time trialer, this could be a great place for him to try and extend those 1 week GC chops.
It's been a weird year for Barguil in that we didn't get to see a whole lot from Barguil earlier in the season because of course, that horrible crash in Spain that he and several other Giant Alpecin riders went through. And the form seemed to be there in the Ardennes, so maybe this is a good time for him to show off that he's doing well. Behind that, you've got Andrew Talansky, who has won one of the two big Tour de France tune-up races in the past, and I think could be good here, given the type of climbs. If not, Joe Dombrowski, another good option for Cannondale. Wilco Kelderman and Robert Hesink for Lotto and El Jumbo. Both of those guys could be up there in this race, strong riders. Matthias Franck tends to do well in his home stage race, tends to do very well, actually, in his home stage race, although we haven't seen a whole lot out of him this year. JC Perrault in the GC conversation. Definitely not particularly young and hasn't really done a whole lot this season. It could be getting up there.
Should go back to mountain biking. It's all the rage.
Yeah, I guess. Miguel Angel Lopez, another name that I'm looking at, from Astana, who is a really talented pure climber and will probably appreciate not having to worry too much about time trial mileage in this race. Definitely could make something happen here. Kind of like Yannis Aguirre. He's a guy that has two really, really good GC guys on his team and doesn't get a whole lot of opportunities to ride for his own ambitions. So I would hope that he'll take advantage of them here. Yeah, but beyond that, I think we get down to some pretty fringe outsiders. I mean, you can't pass on Samuel Sanchez in this conversation in that he's had a pretty good year so far. And Lawrence Ten Dam maybe makes something happen. I think that's pretty much it for the names worthy of the GC conversation. In terms of the stage hunters, there are some big names. Not a whole lot of sprinters, but Peter Sagan, Michael Matthews, you got some good guys there in this stage hunter conversation.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering, and part of this is just maybe me buying too much into the Sagan mountain biking thing, but the effort in a mountain bike race is very different from the effort in a road race, and I'm kind of wondering if we're going to see Sagan being a lot more aggressive, less kind of sitting on and waiting for a sprint that he'll finish second or third in, and more getting out in the break, getting that, you know, 3 hours of consistent hard riding in at, you know, near his threshold, which makes me think this might be more of a Matthews kind of course. Because, I mean, Matthews is in many ways a baby Albasini. You know, he's got that ability to get over climbs and be fast at the end. Not maybe not as much OMP, that's old man power, as we like to say in the people who compete against very fast masters categories. But both of them, I think, especially in the absence of, actual sprinters, in the absence of bigger name group sprinters, have a great shot to pick off sprints here.
So does, of course, Michael Albasini. We've mentioned him before. He's got plenty of days that he can really attack here in this race. And Tuk and Fabian Cancellara, we're talking about veterans who can do well on hilly days. Cancellara, not the kind of sprinter that Albasini is, or of course that Sagan and Matthews are, but he is maybe the best solo artist, the best guy who can attack late in the race in the last decade. And he is, of course, riding in his home race here in Switzerland. And I think that's going to be a pretty good motivator, I would imagine. He has done some big things in the past. That includes winning the overall title back in 2009. Not a particularly mountainous stage race that year, but he has won the whole race before. So I would imagine he'll be motivated to do well this year right before the Tour. We mentioned, I think, in the Dauphiné how many impressive puncheurs there were in that race. One name standing out as being absent there, Philippe Gilbert. He is at the Tour de Suisse. And
hooray!
Indeed, if there are Michael Albasini-type days, then you can bet that there are Philippe Gilbert-type days as well. I think you've got similar abilities there, so some overlap in the profiles. I think Gilbert can maybe come away with the stage when he's been doing pretty well the last couple of weeks in lower-tier races.
I'm always excited to see Sylvain Dellier, but he may be kind of just, you know, chasing. He's a guy can be really valuable kind of in a mid-race breakaway. You want to get him into a group that's kind of tiring, or if you want to just kind of take the pressure off your guys behind, he's an exciting rider to send up the road, though more so in one days than in stage races like this. So
he's pretty good at the Arctic Race in Norway last year. He was second overall, won a stage.
That's true. Yeah, forgot about that.
It's good to watch him. And home roads, you never know. Tim Wellens is on the start list. I know you like him.
I like Tim Wellens. He attacks a lot. He is unafraid to take a chance and lose, which leads to him taking some really good chances and winning on occasion.
Home run hitter.
I don't know that he can climb, per se, but this is... I feel like he would be better at the sort of grindy climbs than the steep, starty, stoppy climbs, but I don't know.
There
have
were
no
a couple days in the Giro where I was impressed at how far along he got. So you never know. He's still young. He's only 25. So those are the stage hunters that we like, guys who we think have a chance to do some things. There are, of course, a couple of other guys who might do well in the time trial. Alex Dowsett is a rider that I never know what to expect from him. It's like it's like he focuses more on breaking obscure British time trial records than winning UCI bike races. And that's fine. That's his thing. 10-mile record holder, all these other things. The time trial here could suit him pretty well. Actually, both time trials here could suit him pretty well. So let's get into the predictions. Let's see if we can't nail a top three here. Do you want to go first?
I will go first. I will pick Rui Costa, the three-time winner, to win a fourth time. He hasn't had any huge results this year. He's been up near the top, which to me says the form is there. This is clearly a race at which he excels. I think, you know, when you've been racing bikes as long as he has, you know the days when you can do well, or I guess weeks in this case. So I think this is going to be a top target for him, I think more so than anyone else on the start list. And I see no reason why he would not do extremely well. Second, I'm going to go with Van Garderen. I think he may rise to the occasion. No puns intended with the climbs and everything. Because, you know, there is a lot of pressure. He's sort of been the guy at BMC for the past few years, and now he is not the guy necessarily at BMC. So this is a good opportunity for him to really let his legs do the talking. You don't have to worry so much about that inter-team strife because there is no guy you're going, you know, getting in the team van with every day who's also competing against you. It's a low-pressure, high-pressure situation where I suspect he will do very well. And then third, I'm going to go with Simon Spelak, a guy who, you know, like I said, is good at these races. Won last year. I see no reason to think he won't do as well this time around.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the races he targets. I like all three of you guys on the podium there, and I'm having a really hard time not making the same three on my podium. The only other guy I'm having a hard time leaving off is Geraint Thomas.
Well, he likes to make us look bad, I feel like.
He did. He was, I think, your best pick you ever made, right? I mean,
oh yeah, but that's in one day. I meant it like stage races. Like, wasn't he like? Didn't they 1-2 with Port at Paris-Nice?
He did. Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, what the hell?
Yeah, that was frustrating.
I remember the frustrating ones, not the great ones.
Yeah, winner of Paris-Nice earlier this year hasn't done a whole lot since March, but I think he's going to be back in shape for the Tour de Suisse. So I'm just having trouble leaving him off the podium here. I'm going to go TJ Van Garderen as my winner. I think he's going to be in really strong shape. And I think there have been so many times these last couple of years where something has gone wrong. And that's been the reason that he has not won this or that race. But the form is there. And I think eventually it's got to come good for him, as they say. So I'll why not at the Tour de Suisse? I think this race does suit him pretty well. I am going to throw Rui Costa onto the podium as well, because it's hard not to put Rui Costa on the podium in this race. And I'm going to put Geraint Thomas on the podium in third, which I hope I'm not taking too big a risk leaving last year's winner Simon Spelak off. But Thomas, to me, looks like he's really well suited to win this race. Sky also has some really impressive riders.
Sky is also Sky.
Every race they go to, Leopold Koenig is here. So, yeah. I think it's hard for me to narrow four down to three, but that's what I'm going to have to do. So there's the podium. So those are our predictions. Some names for the tour in the conversation here. TJ Van Garderen, a name of the tour. But I think it's pretty clear that the GC guys here are a tier below what you get at the Dauphiné. And I don't know that that's a terrible thing. I think it should make for an enjoyable race in that there are some guys here who are really, I think, targeting the Tour de Suisse overall. I will say that I'm a little surprised that a profile like this isn't drawing more stars. I guess the reasoning might be that it's too hard, but there are some serious climbs in this race. And if you want a GC tune-up, this is the race for you. I mean, there are some hard climbs here. So maybe the guys are just worried that they'd be putting too much on the line in this race. But I am looking forward to the 5 days of GC madness that we're going to get in the final 5 days of this race.
See, I think the reasoning, as much as I said this course was kind of scary to me as someone who has a tendency to overdo it in the last stages of their training, I think the bigger reason here may be that it's just not part of the tour organization. Like we said before, it's not an ASO event. I think the Dauphiné is sort of on welfare that's paid by the Tour de France. And it's interesting to note that the people of Switzerland last week shot down a referendum for just a basic income, like $30,000 or euros or whatever, to all adults for whatever purpose, to buy food and, you know, pay for rent and stuff like that. It was this sort of welfare system was lost at the ballots by, I believe, a margin of 2-1.
No welfare in the Tour de Suisse, basically.
There's no, exactly. This is a race without welfare. Yeah, this is a place where the independent race organization stands on its own without it probably does get a lot of local funding. But the point is, this is an independent race. It's its own event. It's
fitting for a Swiss race, I think.
Yeah. That I totally ties in as well as anything else.
I think that's the point. Yeah. So we will next be in the proverbial, it doesn't actually exist, studio for the Tour de France, which is
Tour de France.
Crazy. But it's here. It's
not
a couple
here,
days away. But yeah, it's the final tune-up race. So tune in to get your last look at riders before they actually take on the biggest prize of the season.
Tune in because it's pretty, too.
Yeah. So yeah, keep an eye out at the Tour de Suisse for guys that you are planning to watch in the Tour de France. It's a good look at their form ahead of time. But also just keep a lookout for guys who target this race and the guys who make this race what it is. I think, as we kind of pointed out, Kosta, Spielak, Izaguirre, these are guys who make it worthwhile to watch the one-week races. And also Matthias Franck, I think he's going to be gunning for this in his home stage race. So if you're the sort of person who doesn't really love the one-week races, gets more enjoyment out of the classics, the Grand Tours, you do have a number of those guys here who are going to be gunning full speed ahead for this particular race, I think, which should make it good to watch. So enjoy the 9 days of racing at the Tour de Suisse. We'll next talk to you at the Tour de France. Until then, this has been the Recon Ride Podcast. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.